weeks, if not months. Johnny Depp mostly won his defamation against Amber Heard. Mayan now are the extrapolations that are being made about the Me Too movement, about male domestic violence, and so many different things.
We will finally address it now that it's mostly on the bonus show.
Sign up for the bonus show and join Hackman.com.
You can use the coupon code BIGVOTING22.
But remember, Alex Jones hates bonus
the bonus show. All the bonus show that you make money.
Everybody else makes money to fund themselves. Bad.
Right.
Thank you, Alex.
Well, many people do. Thank you, Alex. You can sign up at join.com. Coupon code BIGVOTING22.
All of those stories and...
Thank you. part, I'd like to remind that the views, thoughts, and opinions expressed are solely those of individuals involved and do not necessarily represent those of Petersburg and its members.
From New York, that is Democracy Now.
I know that we can't retract tragedy. Here's what I believe we have to do. Here's what the overwhelming majority of Americans believe we must do. Here's what the families in Buffalo and Uvalde, Texas, told us we must do. We need to begin the ban of assault weapons and high-capacity magazines.
Following the mass shooting in Uvalde, Buffalo, and Tulsa.
President Biden calls on Congress to enact new gun control measures.
We'll go to Buffalo for response.
From a former Buffalo police officer who is fired for stopping a white officer from choking a black man.
She wants to make sure the nation does not forget last race mass massacre in Buffalo.
But when we look at the Biden administration's decision to cancel almost $6 billion in student loan debt for borrowers and with the now network for profit schools known as Caribbean colleges.
The Department of Education finally mandated by preventing cancer directors mandated over 70 years ago, which was delivered an automatic white discharge for everyone who went to Caribbean college. What the Biden administration needs to do next is learn from the mistakes and administer automatic detention for all borrowers.
And he's a district attorney in San Francisco. He's facing a recall vote funded in part by the real estate industry, Republican billionaire and tech investors. Many see the recall as an attack on progressive areas around the country.
All that and more coming up.
Welcome to Democracy Now, democracy.org, the Peace Report.
I'm Amy Goodman. President Biden calling on Congress to ban assault weapons, ban background checks for gun buyers, and create new red laws that prohibit some people from owning firearms.
Biden made the bold, rare prime address in the White House Thursday evening.
I support the bipartisan efforts of small Democrats and Republicans trying to find a way. But my God, the fact that the majority of the Senate Republicans don't want any of these proposals even to be debated or come up for a vote. I find unconscionable.
Biden remarks came on another day of deadly gun violence across the United States. An Iowa man shot and killed two women in the parking lot before turning the gun on himself. And we're seeing five people wounded Thursday when shots fired at a cemetery where mourners had gathered from a killed by a police officer during a traffic stop last month. In Tulsa, Oklahoma, investigators named the four people killed Wednesday after a gunman opened fire at a medical center before turning the gun on himself. Police say the shooter's primary target was Preston Phillips, an African-American surgeon who performed surgery on the gunman less than two weeks ago. The shooter purchased a semi-automatic rifle used in the murder three hours before he killed not only Dr. Preston, but another doctor, their reception, as well as a patient. The shooter also carried a semi-automatic pistol he bought days before. The House Judiciary Committee voted Lonnie Lawrence Thursday to support a new package of gun controls. The legislation would raise the age of people purchasing a semi-automatic firearm from 18 to 21. It would also regulate storage of guns on residential properties while cracking down on illegal sales of guns and high-capacity magazines. The legislation likely faces a Republican filibuster in the Senate. This is Georgia Congressman Lucy McFadden, 17-year-old Jordan's son, Jordan Davis, murdered by a gunman in 2012.
Do we as a nation have the God-given right to live free from this scourge of gun violence, senseless suffering, of death and despair?
Because we have not been doing this. An entire generation of children are learning that the adults they look up to cannot or will not protect them. We all agree that the status quo is unacceptable. We understand that the murder of our children cannot continue. And we have solutions that a majority of American people believe in.
Ohio's House representative has passed a bill making it easier for teachers and school employees to bring guns into their classrooms. Ohio Governor Mike DeWine has said he looks forward to signing House Bill 99 to allow school employees to carry firearms after just one hour of training. Ohio Federation of Teachers Vice President Sherry Oblinsky cited a parallel Ohio Republicans to ban books from school libraries that deal with topics like race and LGBT plus rights. Teachers aren't trusted to do the curriculum. We aren't trusted with the books we choose, but somehow we're supposed to be trusted with a gun in school. In Ukraine, thousands of people fled frontline towns in the eastern Donbass region as Russia invades and enters its 100th day. Russian forces are seeking to push beyond Donetsk, where they gain control of most of the city. Meanwhile, Ukraine is pressing a counteroffensive in the southern Kherson region. On Thursday, the Ukrainian president, Volodymyr Zelensky, said Russia now controls about 20% of Ukraine's territory. Saudi Arabia said Thursday's oil production to offset fuel costs soared as Russia's invasion of Ukraine. The coalition of oil producing nations known as OPEC has agreed to pump an additional 650,000 barrels per day in July and August. Meanwhile, the Washington Post reports, President Biden will travel to Saudi Arabia later this month, will be the last Prince Mohammed bin Salman to pump more oil. That's despite Saudi Arabia's debate in the 2019 debate for the state-sponsored killing of Washington Post columnist Jamal Khashoggi.
President, not senior Saudi leaders, would you? Yes, I said at the time, Khashoggi was in fact murdered, dismembered, and I would make it very clear we were not going to sell more weapons to them. We would in fact make a pay price and make them a pariah.
Then Joe Biden, speaking to President Biden in 2019, last year, President Biden approved a $60 million arms sale to Saudi Arabia. And earlier this year, Biden signed off the sale of $1 billion of weapons to the United Arab Emirates and Saudi Arabia. Yemen's rebel to agree to extend a ceasefire with the Saudi-led coalition by an additional two months. The warring parties first agreed to a truce during Ramadan in April. This week, 48 U.S. Congress members introduced a war powers resolution calling on the Biden administration to end U.S. military support and arms sales to the Saudi-led coalition attacking Yemen. In a state of Congressional Caucus, Jared Jaffel said there are more than 6 million Yemen living on the brink of starvation and more than 2 million children suffering from acute malnutrition. And the American people's tax dollars are helping finance that suffering. Congressman Jaffel wrote. In the occupied West Bank, Israeli forces killed at least four Palestinians in 2 days. One of the victims was 17-year-old Odessa Dak, who was shot in the chest Thursday. This is an eyewitness.
When he was killed, he was with young men near the barrier. They were not close to the barrier and not near the danger area. They were near homes in the village. They shot him. The bullet was shot towards his heart. Also, they fired towards the other boys who were with him. They ran away and couldn't help him.
In Mexico, immigrant justice advocates held a funeral Thursday for two Haitian asylum seekers who died in Tijuana. After they were blocked from entering the U.S. to avoid the Mexican border city in dangerous conditions. 34-year-old Leon Zenonset was murdered, while 30-year-old Adrian Fong suffered a heart attack and died after advocates say he was denied adequate medical care. The Haitian Bridge Alliance and others blame their deaths on the Biden administration's enforcement of Title 42, the Trump-era pandemic. pandemic policy that allows U.S. authorities to expel asylum seekers at the southern border without due process. Over 2 million people have been blocked from applying for asylum in the U.S. since March 2020 in violation of international law. The House Committee investigating the January 6th Capitol insurrection is scheduled for first public hearing next week. The prime hearing is set for 8 p.m. Eastern time Thursday, June 9th. We'll be streaming the hearing live at democracynow.org. Press freedom groups are demanding justice for Ricardo Avila, a 25-year-old operator in TV killed in southwest Honduras. Local outlets report Avila was shot in the head last week while he rode his bike. He was then taken to a hospital in the capital of Tegucigalpa, where he died of his wound. Avila covered social movements and protests against disruptive economic projects, and it said this, which was named attracting foreign investor as a Tegucigalpa colleague say he was killed. Retaliation for reporting on these issues. In El Salvador, at least 18 people have been killed in the custody of law enforcement. State of emergency was in place in late March in response to rising homicides attributed to gangs. That's according to American human rights group, Cristosal. Amnesty International is accusing the government of Salvador and President Bukele of serious violations. This is Erica Guevara, who is America's director of Amnesty International.
The situation country is critical. According to official figures, in a little over two months, 36,000 people, including children, who have been detained mostly arbitrarily, whose deprivation of freedom is illegal, are facing criminal proceedings without some basic judicial guarantees.
And prominent Sahrawi human rights activist Al-Qaeda has arrived safely in Spanish territory when they were to get medical treatment after more than 500 days of house arrest with her family in Moroccan-occupied Western Sahara. Moroccan authorities subjected Kaya to harassment, beating, sexual assault. They also contaminated her family's water supply, destroyed furniture and property, and cut off electricity to the home. On Wednesday, Kaya's supporters greeted her at her arrival at the airport in the Canary Islands.
The message supports the autonomy plan for Western Sahara.
It is supporting the raping of women, torture, and illegal detention of the Sahrawi population.
Tell this Spanish government that it has already abandoned us years ago.
We have suffered these savages.
We have continued to fight for our self-determination, more than ready to fight for our freedom.
You can see our documentary featuring Sahrawi 4 days in West Sahara as Glass Lalin at our website, democracynow.org. And those are some of the headlines. This is democracynow.org, the peace report, I'm Amy Goodman. In a rare primetime speech from the White House, President Biden called on Congress Thursday to ban assault weapons and expand background checks. Biden condemned the recent massacres in Buffalo, Uvalde, Texas, and Tulsa, Oklahoma.
For God's sake, how much more carnage are we willing to accept? How many more innocent American lives must be taken before we say enough? I know that we can't prevent a tragedy. But here's what I believe we have to do. Here's what the overwhelming majority of American people believe we must do. Here's what families in Buffalo and Uvalde in Texas told us we must do. We need to ban assault weapons and high capacity magazines. And if we can't ban assault weapons, then we should raise the age to purchase them from 18 to 21. Strengthen background checks. And access storage law and red flag laws. Repeal the immunity to protect gun manufacturers from liability. Address the mental health crisis. Deepening the trauma of gun violence and the consequence of that violence. These are rational, common sense measures.
Shortly after President Biden spoke, the House Judiciary Committee passed a gun control measure known as the Protecting Our Kids Act. The full House will pass the legislation next week. Republicans are expected to use the filibuster to reject the bills in the Senate. We go to Buffalo, New York, which is still in mourning after the May 14th massacre when an 18-year-old white supremacist shot 10 black people in a supermarket in the heart of the Buffalo's African-American community. On Wednesday, the gunman was indicted 25 counts, including domestic terrorism and murder as a hate crime. He pleaded not guilty. It was the first time that domestic terrorism charge was used in New York State history. We're joined right now by Carol Horn. She's a community organizer and racial justice advocate in Buffalo. She's also a former Buffalo police officer. In 2008, she was fired from the Buffalo police force after an incident two years earlier when she stopped a white police officer from choking a handcuffed black man during an arrest. Last year, New York court vindicated Horn, making her eligible for back pay and pension benefits. Carol Horn, welcome back to Democracy Now! Our condolences on what has befallen your community, the horrific domestic terrorist attack. Can you start off by talking about where you were when the mass shooting took place? And describe what happened in Buffalo since.
I was at a meeting talking about violence in the area. I actually was on my way to the meeting, and I was about to my daughter's graduation. And when I got to the meeting, one of the advocates that I work with let him know what's going on as far as the shooting.
About the white supremacist gun, 18 years old. Who has now just been charged for murdering the 10 people at the top of the supermarket. Again, he was indicted on 25 counts, including domestic terrorism and murder as a hate crime. First time domestic terror law has ever been used in New York. Can you respond to the chief pleading not guilty?
Well, 25 charges were not enough. He victimized everyone in the community. Even the people who arrived on the scene after it happened and watched the carnage. That he left behind. In our community, we were already open to charges because a lot of the community have been banned from having weapons themselves. Which I think that if we are banning weapons, then everyone should be banning weapons. I really don't understand why someone would need a high-powered weapon in the first place. A lot of times they use the excuse of going hunting. Well, when you're hunting people, I think that you need to just ban the weapons altogether. There is no reason why someone should have a high-powered weapon like that. And by the way, I have not been in the case yet, so I don't have a mention yet.
What do you mean? What happened in your case?
In my case, the decision to fire me was overturned, but I stopped the pension.
And what would it take to get one?
It would take them to issue a check.
I mean, your story is so incredible, and in 2005, after you stopped a fellow white officer, you stopped from putting a black man with a handcuff in a chokehold, and it was you who was fired. But I wanted to ask you about President Biden's visit to Buffalo. He denounced the attack as an act of domestic terrorism and described white supremacy as poison. You're among at least 200 people gathered at the rally, leading the crowd, calling for law enforcement to let Robin Gary inside the center where Biden was speaking. Robin Gary, who the shooter had put a gun in their head. Explain what happened.
Well, she begged for my daughter, and instead of hitting her, he did put the hot gun that he had just killed other people with to her head. At some point, she'll be able to tell her story herself. So, I want to respect that she's not ready to talk about it yet. But at the same time, this is racist terrorism. We have to call it what it is. We have to deal with the race issue. We have to deal with the hate issue. We have it in the police department also. Racism, as far as I'm concerned, because we saw them, when I say them, I mean the Buffalo police, they arrested the racist terrorist with no problem whatsoever. But then you have black men dying in the police, and they have no weapon at all.
Well, let me ask you something. The Justice Department has announced that it's required federal agents to intervene if they see other law enforcement officers using excessive force, first up to the DOJ's use of force power for nearly two decades. I mean, it sounds similar to exactly what you had more than 15 years ago. The law that Ariel wrote in around 2016, and it was implemented in the city of Buffalo.
Carrier's Law, which has its own component, go to carrier's law.com. It needs to be a federal registry. So that officers won't go into one department to another department. When they have exhibited bad behavior.
Are you encouraged by what the DOJ is doing? Now, of course, this only applies to federal agents, wouldn't apply to state or local police.
I am, but it should be all across the board. It should be a federal law. It should be a federal registry.
Your final comment, Carol Horne, it is unbelievable to think that Buffalo attack just happened. The massacre of African Americans, more than half of them grandmothers in the top supermarket. Then Uvalde happened. But there were many in between. There have been dozens of mass shootings since Buffalo. You're a former police officer. The issue of assault weapons, can you talk directly about this? And the myth police officers are for people carrying guns, that you're a former officer who feels assault weapons is important.
Well, I don't think those officers in Texas thought people should carry assault weapons because they didn't go into that school. And I don't believe anyone should carry one, so there's no reason to, unless you want to slaughter a lot of people at one time.
Well, Carol, thank you for being with us, Buffalo. You're a New York Ranger racial justice advocate who tried to stop a white cop from choking a black man during an arrest in 2006.
She was fired in 2008.
Coming up, we'll speak to Jason Boudin, district attorney of San Francisco, facing a recall vote funded in part by the real estate industry, a Republican billionaire, and top tech investors.
Many see the recall as an attack on all progressive DAs across the country. Stay with us.
Don't take my kindness for weakness, by the soul, children, and Michelle Indigo Chella.
This is Democracy Now!, Democracy Now!, or War and Peace, Amy Goodman.
We turn now to California to look at the effort to recall Jason Boudin, the district attorney of San Francisco. Boudin was elected in 2019 on a platform and cash bail and curb mass incarceration. He's part of a growing number of prosecutors around the country who vowed to use the district attorney's seat and tough on crime tactics and restore civil rights.
During his time in office, Boudin had taken many historic actions from charging an officer for creating a wrongful conviction unit that recently led to the freedom of a man wrongfully imprisoned for 32 years.
Jason Boudin has also cut the juvenile jail population in half.
But his efforts to reform the system have faced a backlash funded in part by the real estate industry and the donors.
Key backers of the recall include the billionaire Republican donor William Oberndorf, former PayPal executive David Sachs, Ron Conway, an early DoorDash investor, and Gary Tan, an investor in Instacart.
Jason Boudin's critics blame him for what they describe as a rise in crime in San Francisco, but these claims have been challenged.
The San Francisco Chronicle reported the data shows crime shifted dramatically during the pandemic.
But now that San Francisco is returning to pandemic behavior, so are its crime rates.
Jason Boudin is the child of Weather Underground activist Dean and Gilbert. He grew up with both parents in prison.
His mother, who died last month, was released in 2003.
His father was only released last year after serving 40 years in prison.
San Francisco District Attorney Jason Boudin joins us now.
Welcome back to Democracy Now!, Jason.
You face this recall, first of all. Condolences on the death of your mother.
Thank you. I appreciate it to be back with you.
I want to talk about your mother, but I want to talk about the recall that you're facing on Tuesday. Can you talk about, for many people in the country, it may sound unusual, you're elected to office and then you face a recall. But in California, recall challenges are not as unusual.
Explain who's behind this and why you think it's happening.
Thanks, Amy. I certainly expected and hoped to be able to hunt down and do the work, fixing
our broken and dysfunctional and failed general justice system four years after I was elected four-year term, in California. Recall our rage and the folks behind them, and we saw the attempted recall of Governor Gavin Newsom, a Republican, and which union operatives, and ultra right-wing groups that have learned the hard way that they cannot win at the ballot box if they put candidates where their idea the voters. In other words, their only path to winning is not to actually vote their policies or principles or value, even their candidates are. But rather to attack those of us that have won an election, Democrat. As you mentioned, the primary individual, the recall man, is a man named William Obergefell. And to be clear, who he is and what his values are, he has given over $6 million to pack controlled by one-time Senate majority leader Mitch McConnell. And he helped Mitch McConnell, Moscow Mitch, as they call them, pack U.S. Supreme Court. His values include eradicating gun control laws, taking away women's right to control their bodies, and attacking the right to vote. These are not sample values. But he would never be able to win his chosen candidate. And so instead, they spent the incredible sum of $7 million in local election. Without putting forward a single concrete proposal for addressing problems that San Francisco faces every day, without building homeless shelter or helping to support our underfunded school teachers, without advancing one iota of concrete policy proposal evidence for how we better than we are doing every day.
Can you talk about what you think are your greatest accomplishments at this point?
No, I'm tremendously proud. A lot of the work, particularly when you look at it in the context of a global pandemic. I took off in January 2020, and two months later, I was shut out of my office, and our courts all but shut down. And we haven't ever gotten back to full capacity. But despite that obstacle, the things I'm most proud of are I'll give you three examples. First, a historic increase. In our overall incarceration population, we have shown that it is possible to dramatically reduce reliance on jails and prisons, even as crime rates remain at historic lows, our violent crime rates are lower than 4% cities nearby with supposedly tough crimes prosecutors. We do not need to jail our way out of poverty or other social problems. Second, investing in saving incarceration and mass expansion of victim services. I'm tremendously proud of my work and my advocates do. Not focused narrowly on punitive outcomes, but focused entirely on trying to support those who have been harmed by crime, regardless of what language they speak or what country they're born in. We've had a really significant increase in language access. I created 10 new victim advocate positions and eight of the hired to fill those positions are fully bilingual. Chinese is the biggest language language far in San Francisco. And incredibly, when I took off, we had just one Chinese victim advocate. Now we have five. That's just a couple of examples of victim advocacy that I'm proud of. I want to give you one other category of achievements that I'm proud of, and that is our work to build a justice system. That work, our world to hold those in power in the same way that the system is designed to do for generations of those who are black, brown, or marginalized. In other words, they created a protection unit that has set the very companies like William Oberndorf have made their millions off of. Because they're systematically stealing from their employees. We created an innocence commission, as you said, that exonerated a man who was convicted by this failed system after 32 years of incarceration. And we are police and others in government corrupt, steal from voters and taxpayers,
accountable. We are doing difficult work.
Taking on the status quo in a way that is giving honor and dignity and meaning to the words of the stone over almost every courthouse in America.
Equal protection under law.
In speaking to the New York Times, you talked about a man who offered to support you if you stopped supporting San Francisco Sanctuary City. Who was that? What happened?
That was William Orndorff. I introduced him back in 2019 when I was a kid, we had a very short meeting because he was rabid and insistent that the only path to San Francisco Sanctuary was for San Francisco to start cooperating with ICE and expediting anybody contact law enforcement. I made it very clear that as a matter of law, I simply disagreed with his view as district attorney. I told him now it is critical that all of our communities, including our immigrants here in the city that is a proud sanctuary city, feel comfortable and safe cooperating with law enforcement. If a victim of domestic violence, undocumented, do we want her living in the shadows, not coming forward and seeking services and accountability because of her status? No, we want those people we prosecute to know that if they show up to court, they will face consequences and accountability comparable to anyone else who's charged with the same crime, but we will not engage in budget punishment. We will undermine the trust, the authority, the ability of our immunities to fully participate in our society, to seek services, be held accountable, and to join us in San Francisco as residents that share this beloved city. I told him that. He was livid and outraged when his wife tried to call down unsuccessfully, and at the end of the meeting, I haven't spoken to him since. But he has now pumped more than $650,000 into this recall, half of it amazingly was done in a stock, not cash, stock. So that he could avoid paying capital gains on the increasing value of that stock investment.
Chase, can you tell us about who Joaquin Siria is and the Innocence Commission?
Joaquin Siria is a Cuban American man who was convicted of murder and not committed more than 32 years ago now. One of my promises as a candidate for justice was to create an independent Innocence Commission because I recognize it is not enough to do just going forward. We must also look back and correct injustices that have been perpetrated by our office or by the broader criminal legal system. We know that time, science, forensic, remedic evidence, and change, and we know their understanding of police misconduct, prosecutor's conduct, and even jury error have improved and changed. And so we do significant amount of looking back at cases where people were potentially wrongly convicted or other similar situations, perhaps a wrongful conviction, but it was an egregious, draconian sentence. And we try to correct the injustices of the past, even as we move forward with more than 15,000 criminal cases taken office. In one case, the case of Syria, we found a man. Who had been convicted of murder, there was no real motive, there was no forensic evidence whatsoever connecting the case. We saw many of the red flags of wrongful convictions around the country. No forensic evidence, coercion, confession, granted immunity to another person who wasn't a suspect to testify against him. Coercive interrogation tactics, police on a juvenile. I could go on. But we did in that case. Once we had language, the only consistent fact and our duty, the oath of office, swore. And that was the ask of the court to vacate the conviction and release him. Thankfully, after fully briefed the court and reviewed the evidence as well, the court granted our request. And Joaquin Siria is now a free man. I would tremendously meet him at an event celebrating his release. To speak with him, it was a fun conversation in Spanglish. We both spoke languages and we flipped back and forth. And he had a tremendously big heart. He's not bitter or resentful. He is ecstatic to be his wife, family, and be able to move forward after 32 years of wrongful conviction.
Chase, I wanted to turn to an ad supporting your recall.
This was financed by the San Francisco Public Safety.
District Attorney Chuck McGee selling anti-Chinese Republican.
You gotta be kidding me.
I win. Republican, Democrat.
Uniting for the cause of the Jews.
by San Francisco's public safety. Tell us they are and respond to the ads allegations.
Together and one by one, I needed home. I got my teacher's college in Columbia.
I grew up wanting to be a doctor.
He built a program at a major hospital in New York.
It was like five or six different hospitals in prison.
That program was to provide a welcoming medical care for people coming home from prison.
We initiated what ended up being the Center for Justice at Columbia.
The entire university,
different disciplines
would get involved in thinking about the values of the prison system.
We all have a way of contributing to the assessment.
That's Kathy Eugene, she died a month ago here in New York of cancer. Chase, can you talk about your mom and what she meant to you visiting both your parents in prison?
Amy, it's hard. I love my mom. If she were here, she'd be watching. Your show. She loved watching. she loved watching your show. She found ways every day from prison during her 22 years behind bars. And after she came home, to love me, support me, and give back to everybody around her. We're celebrating the tremendous, full, rich life that she lived, even as we mourn her loss. And we have so much to be thankful for. She was fighting for cancer for seven years. She lived long enough to be the first person to welcome my son home from the hospital. When he was born nine months ago today. She was lucky enough to welcome my father, who went for four years in prison, so sorry, it's emotional. But she was a wonderful mother. And we miss her.
And Chase, before we go, I wanted to ask how your father is doing.
Just recently released from prison after 40 years.
And then losing your mother, Kathy Boudin.
He's doing really well. Thank you for asking. He didn't expect to come home and have my mother's health. Takes up a step, but he dove headfirst into being a caretaker. For her, and I were with her at her bedside when she died. Actually, listening to the same Simone album that they listened to. When she brought me into the world.
Chase, we thank you so much for being with us again.
Condolences on the death of your mother, Kathy Boudin.
Chase, District Attorney of San Francisco faces a recall vote on Tuesday.
Thank you.
Coming up, the Biden administration canceled almost $6 billion in student loan debt for borrowers who attend the now defunct network of for-profit schools known as Corinthian colleges.
We'll get a response.
Hang on. on in there by John Legend and the Ruth.
And the Ruth. John Legend is a prominent endorser of Jason Rudin
working against the recall vote.
This is democracynow.org,
Peace Report. I mean, the Department of Education canceled $5 billion in student loan debt for borrowers who attended
the now-defunct network of for-profit schools known as Corinthian College.
The largest one-time discharge of debt ever made by the Department of Education.
Vice President Kamala Harris formally announced debt cancellation Thursday.
All former students will soon receive notice that Corinthian College federal loans will be canceled, and this will benefit more than half a million people who still have loans,
and it will add up to almost $6 billion in debt relief for former students.
And of course, we all know that's real money
in the pockets of real people.
Who have faced over these years significant debt.
Many of whom are still struggling
to make ends meet
as costs have gone up.
Former Corinthians have been organizing for years to abolish debt. In 2015, former students of the Corinthians launched what they described as the nation's first student debt threat.
We're joined now by Kamala Hunt,
former student of the for-profit college chain,
who took part in the debt.
She's also a member of the debt collective working to end the student loan crisis, and we're joined by Brian Bruin, press secretary of the debt collective.
We welcome you both to Democracy Now!
Kamala, let's begin. With you.
Talk about what just happened.
This is historic.
And what it means for so many students in Corinthian colleges.
It is very historic. And it's a very monumental win for the for-profit students from Corinthian. It was a long time coming. We've been in this fight for eight and a half years. I would say it was eight years. Longer than it should be. But it does give students some breathing room. Some of the hardships that they've faced while dealing with this monumental debt.
However, I'm wondering if you can talk specifically about yourself.
You had over $100,000 in debt
from studies at Corinthian colleges.
Others were given less, but you still faced $100,000.
Explain what happened dealing with this
as you also deal with cancer.
Yes, I was diagnosed with cancer as I was in the fight. In the meantime, when I was going through my cancer treatment, the Obama administration was in office, and I did send him a movie clip a video clip while I was going treatment, and you know, and, you asking him if he could go ahead and you know cancel the illegitimate debt because I was one of the students that was being audited, and I mean, it did make going through my treatment a lot harder because stress
We have 10 seconds. Thank you. here I thought I had this player figured out. Oh boy.
You see, there's no button on it that says play.
That's room.
There's no button that says play.
That's play mode, which I understand to be continuous
single.
But it says call on it. And I guess call is what we used to call play because
they got it to play.
I'll get used to it.
That's what I was starting to feel
at home here
after our long COVID playoff.
We start getting new equipment.